And now we're going to hear about the first of our two singers on this afternoon's program, Lawrence Melchior. Not Lawrence Melchior, as the dim bulbs who put this program together have spelled it. But in any event, we will hear Gary Gaylow. And Gary has been an ARSC member since 1982, a reviewer for the ARSC Journal since 1989, was the sound recording review editor of the ARSC Journal from 1995 to 2012, and co-chair of the ARSC Technical Committee from 1996 to 2004. He has been a frequent presenter at ARSC conferences and has authored several articles for the ARSC Journal. He recently retired after 35 years as audio engineer at the Crane School of Music, SUNY Potsdam, New York, where he has also taught courses in music history and audio technology. Not ready to quit completely, he now works half-time in that capacity. The author of over 260 articles and reviews on both technical and musical subjects, he is a regular contributor to Audio Express magazine, periodically reviews books for Notes, Quarterly Journal of the Music Library Association, and has written for Linear Audio, the newsletter of the Wilhelm Furtwängler Society of America, and is the author of the loudspeaker entry in the Encyclopedia of Recorded Sound in the United States. Please welcome Gary Gaylow.
Thank you. Just give me a second here to get the right PowerPoint presentation up. Either that or I'll have to read another paper. Okay, I think we have it. Great. Does everybody have a handout? Good. Last year in Rochester, I gave a presentation titled The Other Great Dane, Helga Rosvænge, commemorating the 40th anniversary of the death of the Danish dramatic tenor. Well, this year is the 40th anniversary of the death of the great Dane, Lauritz Melchior, arguably the finest Helden tenor on record, and quite probably the finest in the entire history of that species. Today, I'd like to examine the qualities of both his vocal technique and his musicianship through a sampling of his commercial and live recordings. Now, I have included three short biographies in the handout, which you can read at your leisure. I don't intend to cover a great deal of biographical information in this presentation. Like a number of tenors with robust voices, Melchior began his career as a baritone, making his debut as Silvio in Pagliacci in Copenhagen in 1913. During his brief career as a baritone, he also sang, among other roles, Count de Luna in Il Trovatore and Germont in La Traviata. His first recording was Germont's second act aria, made in January or February of 1913. Although Melchior does sound a bit misplaced, he has obviously been well-schooled. He has a very good low register, his vocal production is easy and unforced, but his upper register sounds like he's in the middle of his voice. Later in life, he remarked that he never really felt comfortable as a baritone. Track one.
Oh.
In 1969, George Jelinek interviewed Melchior on his WQXR program, The Vocal Scene, and he asked Melchior if it had been helpful to him to have started as a baritone.
You cannot build a skyscraper on sand. You have to have the low register natural. And that is where the thing is, because it is not a born voice. A heroic tenor is not a born voice. It's a voice who develops later.
In 1916, Melchior sang a performance of Il Trovatore in Sweden with Madame Charles Cayet as Azucena. During the performance, the soprano singing Leonora feared that she could not manage the high C at the end of her duet with De Luna. Melchior suggested that they switch parts, so he sang it for her, effortlessly by all accounts. After the performance, Madame Cayet told him that he was no baritone. "I think you're a tenor with the lid on, a Heldon tenor, probably." On Cayet's advice, Melchior began studies with Danish tenor Wilhelm Herold. In 1918, after 2 years of study, Melchior made a second debut in Copenhagen as a tenor, singing the title role in Wagner's Tannhäuser. Like all of the operatic roles he sang in Denmark, Tannhäuser was sung in Danish. In 1920, after a concert in London, Melchior met the English novelist Hugh Walpole, who believed in Melchior's potential and became his patron. In 1922, Walpole introduced Melchior to the eminent Wagnerian soprano Anna Bar-Mildenberg. Bar-Mildenberg agreed to coach Melchior in several Wagner roles, but she told him that it would take at least a year of his time. If Melchior would stay the course, she assured him that the world would be at his feet. This crucial period of study was made possible by Walpole's generous subsidy. By the time Melchior recorded his first excerpt from Tannhäuser singing in German, he had been well-schooled in the role and exhibits the vocal security that would soon make him the preeminent Wagner tenor of his time. Melchior was, to be sure, born with a phenomenal natural gift, but there was more to it than that. His vocal studies provided him with a superb technical foundation. The foundations of his technique included, first of all, the ability to sing softly in all registers, always on his breath. Melchior never crooned or faked anything when he sang softly. It was all fully supported. He developed a superb legato. He also had a properly developed low register, which he said in that interview was extremely important. He had a very well-developed passaggio, which works superbly for him at all dynamic levels, the passaggio being that area at the top of the treble staff that bridges the tenor's low register to the upper register, and which, I might add, no one seems to get right today. His voice was even throughout the registers. His production was easy at all dynamic levels in all registers. He had unrivaled stamina, and I must point out that this was not just from natural endowment, which he surely had, but from proper vocal development and training. He had the ability to sing Wagner's most demanding roles without tiring. His voice remained in remarkable condition well past age 60, and there was not a trace of wobble even at 70, as we will hear later on. Melchior's natural endowment was, to be sure, a freak of nature, but what he learned to do with it most certainly was not. He achieved what he achieved, both technically and musically, through hard work. Scandinavian songs were an important part of Melchior's non-Wagnerian repertoire throughout his career. In 1926, he made a superb recording of the song Tonerna by Sjöberg. The recording shows much about Melchior's technique. Melchior moves through the entire dynamic range of his voice easily without any shifting of gears. The recording also shows his impeccable legato, the development of his passaggio, and the evenness of his voice throughout the registers. Melchior's favorite non-Wagner role was Otello, which he sang a total of 31 times between 1928 and 1939. In German opera houses, including Berlin, he sang in the vernacular, but in London and San Francisco, Melchior performed the opera in Italian. He tried to persuade Giulio Gaddi-Cazzazza to revive the opera for him at the Met, but Gaddi said he had enough trouble with his temperamental Italian tenors and was not looking for more, which he surely would have had if he had given Otello to Melchior. Melchior's German language recording from 1930 of the monologue from Act III should dispel many myths about Melchior's musicianship. It's certainly true that Melchior was not an intellectual musician, but his musical instincts in this recording are unfailingly right. Where most Italian tenors engage in all sorts of self-indulgence in the opening of this passage, Melchior sticks to the A flats written by the composer, even when the underlying harmony tends to force the singer away from them. The result is much more effective, musically and dramatically. The recording also shows the excellence of Melchior's vocal technique. He is in command of the full dynamic range of his voice, always on the breath in the soft passages, and able to sing the climactic B flats with a freedom and ease that has eluded most Italian tenors. This is one of Melchior's greatest recordings.
Warum hast du gehäuft dieses Elend und diese Leiden auf meinen Scheitel? Thank you.
Sigmund in Die Walküre had a special significance for Melchior. It was the first role he sang in German, first in London in 1924, and then at Bayreuth later that year. Earning the respect of the Wagner family was a significant step in assuring his dominance as the most important Heldentenor of his generation. In 1935, Melchior made a definitive studio recording of Act I of Die Walküre with Lotte Lehmann, Emanuel Liszt, and the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra conducted by Bruno Walter. Fortunately, several live broadcast recordings of Die Walküre also exist, including Act I, Scene 3 with Toscanini, showing Melchior's characterization of the role under several conductors. When Sigmund calls to his father, whom he knows as Velze, Melchior wanted to make sure that he was heard. In this 1940 Met broadcast with Leinsdorf, he holds the first Velze, which is a G-flat right at the edge of the tenor's passaggio, a treacherous note. Unless you know what you're doing, which he did, he holds it for 15 seconds, and the second, a G natural, for 12 seconds. And neither Walter nor Toscanini would allow him to do this.
In feindes Haus. Deiner Rachewand rast ich hier. Mein Feind sei ich vor sich und her. Thank you.
In 1929, Melchior tackled the role of Tristan for the first time, singing it in Berlin, London, and at the Metropolitan Opera in New York. The following year, he sang it at the Bayreuth Festival. It became his most frequent Wagner role. Melchior's natural endowment, combined with his excellent vocal training, gave him the stamina to sing this punishing role with greater assurance than any other tenor. After the singing the first two very demanding acts, Tristan must then tackle the delirium in Act Three. This excerpt from a 1938 Met broadcast shows him able to deliver this music with abandon. Melchior never had to pace himself through this role. He knew that his voice would never fail him, and it never did. I want to thank Ward Marston for providing me with a transfer of this excerpt from a set of 78 RPM off-the-air discs. Although there's not much treble, the sound is much more listenable than the harsh, edgy transfer in Sony's Wagner at the Met box. On that same vocal scene program in 1969, Melchior reflected on the role of Tristan.
You know that the role of Tristan is like a mine. Every time you go down and dig in it, you find new treasures and new things. You never get tired of singing that role, even how many times you sing it. It's a great challenge to the artist, and it is, to my opinion, one of the greatest things in about love ever written. And I think that I was very fortunate to have the quality and the intelligence enough to make that part famous. I love that part, and it is marvelous.
If there's one other Wagner role that presents an endurance test rivaling Tristan, it's the young Siegfried. After over two acts of some of the most demanding music ever written for a tenor, Siegfried then faces a Brunhilde who hasn't sung a note for a duet lasting about half an hour. Although we have multiple broadcast recordings of Tristan and Die Walküre with Melchior, there was only one complete broadcast of Siegfried during his tenure at the Met, January 30th, 1937, with Kirsten Flagstad, his regular Wagner partner at the Met from 1935 until 1941. Here's the conclusion, with Melchior sounding as fresh as when he began. In 1944, Melchior embarked on a new career, making the first of five motion pictures. Thrill of a Romance starred Van Johnson and Esther Williams and featured a typecast Melchior playing an overweight Danish tenor named Niels Knudsen, who has come to a California resort hotel to diet. In this scene, Oscar the waiter brings him his daily ration of vegetables for dinner. Melchior protests, letting Oscar know what kind of vegetables he really wants. I just cropped a still photo from this scene. You'll get the idea from the dialogue.
Is that all I get?
Yes, sir, that is all.
No dessert?
Well, I could maybe bring you another carrot.
Oscar, do I even look a little like a rabbit?
No. Oh, no, no, sir, but your diet says only vegetables.
Vegetables? The only vegetables I like are steak and beer. Bring me some right away.
No, sir.
My hero. When Rudolf Bing took over as general manager of the Met in 1950, Melchior's contract was not renewed, ending a 24-year tenure. His final performance as Lohengrin took place on February 2nd of that year, just a few weeks shy of his 60th birthday. It was his 519th performance with the company. In terms of the sheer number of performances, Melchior left a staggering track record. During his 32-year career as a tenor, he had sung 972 Wagner performances, including 223 as Tristan. There are those who have said that because Wagner's operas were always cut back then, that Melchior never had to sing any of these roles complete. This is simply untrue. At Bayreuth, he sang the Gotterdammerung Siegfried in 1926 and 1927, Siegmund in 1924 and 1925, Tannhäuser in 1931, and Tristan in 1930 and 1931. At Bayreuth, Wagner's music dramas were always performed uncut. It's true that cuts were the norm at the Metropolitan Opera, but on special occasions, non-broadcast Met performances of Wagner operas were sometimes given complete. And if you check the Met's online database, you'll find that Melchior appeared in 47 uncut performances of the Ring operas between 1930 and 1948. After his retirement from the operatic stage, Melchior continued his film career and also made numerous appearances in radio and television, including the voice of Firestone. Fortunately, a 2-hour sampling of his Firestone telecasts have recently been reissued on DVD. In this performance from September 24, 1951, he sings Richard Strauss's Zueignung, joined on the set by his wife, Kleinchen. To have a voice in this condition at age 61 would be remarkable for any singer, but when you consider the number of Wagner performances behind him, it's nothing short of astounding. To commemorate Melchior's 70th birthday, he sang a concert performance of Act I of Die Walküre in Copenhagen. This was his last appearance as Siegmund. Although he can't hold the Welses as long as he did in his prime, he makes a valiant attempt. Do I have 5 more minutes?
No.
No, I do not.
No, you don't.
Okay. Well, I'm through. So you can read about various reissues that I was going to talk about if we had extra time. You can read about them in the handout. Let me just say in conclusion that despite the large quantity of Melchior reissues, there's still a need for a comprehensive Melchior collection. A number of Melchior's 78 RPM recordings have never been reissued, and many that have appeared only on Dainacord and are plagued by poor sound and incorrect pitch. Ward Marston tells me that he'd love to do a Melchior edition on his own label if he could find a donor to subsidize the project. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Gary, as you were going through that list of cuts and playing the, particularly the the Siegfried duet, I thought to myself, isn't it unfortunate that we weren't alive to hear that singing in person? And isn't it fortunate that the singing was recorded so that we get some idea of it anyway?